This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know around here we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million. Case Shiller, Pumpkin Spice, and the Nature of Money. What more do you need? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Riznall. It is Tuesday, today the 26th of September. Good as always to have you along, everybody. The good things in life, they say, are worth waiting for. And as a measure of what's happening in residential real estate in this country, there are few things as good as the S&P CoreLogic Case-Shiller Home Price Index. Not, perhaps, where you thought I was going, but Case-Shiller is worth the wait. For July, your favorite national index of home prices hit an all-time high. An all-time high, one is obliged to add here, that's happening as mortgage rates are well above 7% for a 30-year fixed loan. High interest rates and high prices is an unusual combination for the housing market, and it is changing the whole dynamic between buyers and sellers. Marketplace's Kristen Schwab and Matt Levin are tag-teaming this one for us today.
Okay, so we're going to role-play a bit here. I'm going to be the would-be buyer, which is actually kind of what I am. I don't own a home, but maybe someday.
Don't give up, Kristen. I do own a home, so I'll be playing the part of potential seller.
And in this market, there are way more buyers. People like me, like there always seem to be.
Currently, I am working with more buyers than sellers.
That's Kama Burton. She's going to play a realtor here because she actually is one in Riverside County in Southern California.
Now, I know it's not an ideal time to buy a home. Mortgage rates are super high. But I'm sick of paying basically as much to rent a one-bedroom apartment in New York as what Matt pays for a three-bedroom house in Sacramento. Impatience is one thing, but many buyers in the market today need to buy a home.
Whether it's a life-changing event, your employment is changing, your family may be growing, and sometimes just maybe you want a change of scenery.
Of course, those life-changing events also happen to sellers, but given the age of your typical homeowner, it's often a different set of life changes. A divorce, a hip replacement, gotta move closer to the grandkids.
But do you love your grandkids enough to lose your 3% 30-year fixed mortgage? Craig Lazara is managing director at S&P Dow Jones Indices, which publishes Case-Shiller data.
A lot of people who might want to move are being discouraged from moving simply because they realize they will have to pay dramatically higher financing costs on their new house relative to the mortgage they've locked in on their old house.
It's me. Hi, I'm the problem. It's me. I have a 3% mortgage rate and I do not want to give that up.
And not only is Matt stubborn, but he's also got quite the ego.
Back when I bought my house in 2021, which in housing seems like eons ago, it was a bidding war. If I'm going to sell, I expect a line outside the open house. Daryl Fairweather, chief economist at Redfin, says sellers like me haven't adapted to reality.
And I think that's why we're seeing so few listings in those markets. Sellers don't want to take anything less than the peak.
Even though Fairweather says the peak was probably inflated.
And it's not just sellers who have unrealistic expectations right now. I do too. The buyer. Michael Urbino is a managing broker with Compass in Seattle.
The buyers are hoping it's 2008. And so we have this kind of split in people's perception of the market.
Since the pandemic began, everything has been so wacky. Yeah, buying a house a couple years ago was stressful.
We looked for 9 months until we found our home.
And you might have paid a lot, but at least you ended up with the house.
We went through an extreme period where everybody felt like a winner. Usually in kind of a zero-sum game, there's a winner and a loser. In this case, it's not that simple.
It turns out neither of us are very happy with the market right now.
But you are a homeowner.
Yeah, and I'm not going to sell anytime soon.
In New York, I'm Kristen Schwab.
And in Sacramento, I'm Matt Levin
for Marketplace.
On Wall Street on this Tuesday, bond yields are going up. The dollar is going up. Stocks are going down. Ticker symbol AMZN off more than 4% today as the Federal Trade Commission in 17 states sued the retail conglomerate over illegally using its monopoly power. AMZN, by the way, Amazon. All three major indices off more than 1%. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. All right, quick, what is by most regulation no less than 6 inches tall, usually more like 8? It's something you see every single day, and it is first among equals in explaining the current economic mood in these United States. Carola Binder at Haverford College, what do you think?
I couldn't necessarily tell you what the price of an airline ticket to Florida would be right now, or I couldn't tell you what the price of a pound of steak would be right now, but I could tell you the price of a gallon of gas.
$3.838 a gallon is national average as of today. That's according to AAA. And according to the Conference Board, it's the main reason its index of consumer confidence that was out this morning took a tumble this month.
Even if gas prices aren't the best kind of signal of how the economy is doing, they're an easy signal to get. So there's something that play a pretty big part in how consumers respond to these kind of consumer confidence surveys.
For me, gasoline is a necessity. You know, you got to fill up the car no matter what.
Dana Peterson is the chief economist at the Conference Board.
But for a lot of folks, it may mean that they drive less. And certainly that's a problem if you need to drive to work. And lots of folks in America do, just given the fact that there isn't public transportation everywhere.
And it changes how people spend money, especially people at the lower end of the income spectrum.
Just like I see gasoline as a necessity, other consumers may see that as well, and other things will be discretionary. So they're going to cut back on discretionary spending.
And just to complicate things, and to paraphrase my political reporter colleagues, all economics is local. Matt and Kristen were talking about this with housing, right? Last word on gas today goes to Carola Binder at Haverford.
We walk a lot of places, but we do some driving, so I do follow gas prices. We were just in New Orleans, and I was noticing how gas prices were a lot lower there than they are in Philadelphia, where I live.
There are interviews we do on this program because the news demands, or it's something I'm interested in, or we think there's something that really needs explaining. And then there are interviews we do on this program because the producers say, no, come on, you gotta do this one. This is one of those. This year marks 20 years of the pumpkin spice latte, of which Starbucks sells, well, look, a lot every year. Emily Heil is a food writer at The Washington Post, where she has chronicled the history and the power of the pumpkin spice latte. Emily, welcome to the program.
Great to be with you.
I'm feeling an obligation here, professionally and personally, to get biases on the table. I am opposed in every measure to pumpkin spice and pumpkin spice lattes. Where do you stand?
Well, you know, I'm not a pumpkin spice latte fan, but I'm not opposed to it just sort of as a general flavor profile. It's actually just sort of baking spices. So it can be kind of delicious and used in the right context. Don't love it in the latte. It's a little too sweet for me.
All right. Please don't take offense. That seems a little wishy-washy. That's all I'm saying. Either you're firm or you're against them. That's all I'm saying.
It's context. It's all about context.
All right. All right. Fair enough. Look, so to this piece, it did not have an auspicious beginning when it started 20 years ago. How come?
No, this actually almost wasn't. In 2003, they wanted a seasonal drink. They'd done really well with the peppermint mocha at Christmas, and they wanted to replicate it for fall. So they were trying all these different flavors, and they'd done customer surveys. And the customer surveys revealed that what people wanted was caramel and chocolate. But the Starbucks wizards insisted that they wanted something more fall-like, persisted in pumpkin, and ended up bringing it to market.
Instagram comes along and the thing explodes. Help me understand.
I really believe that Instagram and the success of the PSL sort of go hand in hand. Instagram has this visual language and you need signifiers, right? Like the kid standing next to the sign saying what grade they're going into. And the pumpkin spice latte is like this visual cue that people can use on their Instagram feeds to do these seasonal things. And, you know, it sort of develops this whole aesthetic around it, which is kind of like this basic white girl, fall-loving giant scarves in the pumpkin patch. And that kind of becomes synonymous with the PSL.
So the follow-on question to that is, and maybe it doesn't need to be asked given what you've just described, why did this thing become so divisive? And maybe I'm, you know, injecting my own bias in here, but it does seem that, you know, people either love them or hate them.
Well, I think that when people talk about loving or hating PSL, often they're not talking about the drink itself, right? They're kind of talking about the aesthetic around it. And I think that drew the haters. It drew, you know, the critics. And so it became this sort of flashpoint that you either hated the PSL or you loved it. So I really think that when you're talking about haters, they're probably not even really talking about the taste. They might not have even had a PSL.
Well, as long as I'm confessing my biases here, it was, oh gosh, not until like 3 years ago that I actually had a pumpkin spice latte. But look, let me actually ask you this. I find it very interesting that you abbreviated as PSL, like everybody knows what you're talking about.
I know. I'm sorry about that. It's sort of a hashtag, right? Like, oh yeah, the PSL, of course.
Right.
And that goes to the sort of the social media aspect of this drink. And that has sort of seeped into the way we even talk about it.
So then setting aside for a fact that for a while, it didn't even have any pumpkin in it. Hello. It has now given rise to everything from pumpkin spice spam to like dog food and you name it. And the question is, why? What is it about this flavor that made people just go anywhere with it?
Well, I think there's sort of a seasonality thing that people really love. Now, if you want to get really deep on it, I once talked to you.
deeper than you've already gotten? Sorry, just kidding.
I know. But sort of on a more like elemental level, you know, it may be that, you know, with climate change that we're not actually really experiencing fall. And so we sort of have this nostalgic idea about it. And the way we feel that sort of desire is by buying things that make us think, oh, now it's fall. And maybe sweat is pouring down my back, but hey, I've got, you know, this orange candle and it's going to make me feel really good.
Look, that's terrifying, but not wrong, right? So it's been 20 years. Do you think it lasts another 20 or do we eventually get tired of this?
I think the pumpkin spice as a flavor and the pumpkin spice latte, certainly, I think they're here to stay. Mm. I know we're talking about it because it's the 20th anniversary, but sort of more generally, it's just sort of become part of the fabric of our lives. It's now vanilla and chocolate and peppermint and pumpkin spice. It's just become just another flavor. And maybe it gets incorporated into, you know, some weird new product, but in general, it's just kind of part of the human condition.
Get over it, Guy. Emily Heil, she's a food reporter at the Washington Post. Thanks, Emily. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Guy.
You know what goes really well with your morning pumpkin spice latte, if you are a believer? David Brancaccio and the Marketplace Morning Report. They are up early every single day, bringing you all the news you need to start your economic day. Check it out. Coming up.
I'm always saying, like, nothing costs what you think it does.
Truer words were never said. But first, let's do the numbers. Ooh, the Wawas. I'm not sure I was expecting that. Dow Jones Industrial Average down 388, 1.1%, 33,618. The NASDAQ dropped 207 points, 1.6%, closed at 13,063. The S&P 500 gave back 63 points, 1.5%, 42.73. Hey, how's your French? The 2024 Olympics hosted en Paris. Just held the job fair to fill about 16,000 catering, security, transport, cleaning, and other jobs ahead of the games opening next July. Fair was held in Saint-Denis, which is a working-class multicultural suburb of the city where the unemployment rate is about 10%. That is 3 points higher than the national average over there. Heard earlier about the housing market from Kristen and Matt. So some housing-related stocks. How about that? Atlanta-based builder Pulte Group slipped 0.9%. Zillow fell 0.4%. Mortgage and real estate broker Redfin down about 1%. Today, RE/MAX, which is based in Denver, gained 0.3%. With the markets where they are today, you might want to salve your disappointment with some sweets. Hershey down 0.4% today. Tootsie Roll Industries lost 0.7%. Rocky Mountain Chocolate Factory sweetened 2.1% today. Bonds down. The yield on the 10-year T-note, listen carefully, 4.55%. Historically, not all that high. Big jump, though, lately. You're listening to Marketplace.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling shipping supplies or promoting productivity programs, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/marketplace, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/marketplace now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/marketplace.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. If we are going to avoid the most catastrophic effects of climate change, climate scientists say we're going to have to limit how much hotter the planet gets to 1.5 degrees Celsius above the pre-industrial economy. We're well on our way to blowing past that, but there is still a chance, albeit slim, that we can avoid it if we keep increasing how much clean energy we use. That's the takeaway from a report out today from the International Energy Agency. We've bought ourselves that narrow window with the existing investments we have made in wind, solar, and other renewables, $1.8 trillion in green energy so far, the IEA figures. But to actually dodge the worst of climate change, it's going to cost more, a lot more, $4.5 trillion a year by the early 2030s. Marketplace's Henry Epp is on that one.
First, the good news. It's gotten a lot cheaper to manufacture and deploy renewable energy in the last couple years.
Solar and wind are, in many cases, the most cost-effective new technology to put in.
Kenneth Gillingham is a professor of economics at the Yale School of the Environment. He says solar and wind technology has improved the more we've used it.
As you scale up, you learn a lot about how to cut the cost out of the technology and improve it further, which brings down costs continually.
But even though renewable power is getting cheaper, we don't have nearly enough of it to keep carbon emissions in check, says Jake Schmidt with the Natural Resources Defense Council. Right now, the International Energy Agency estimates we invest about $1.70 in clean sources for every dollar that goes into fossil fuels.
That needs to rise to $10 in clean energy investment for every dollar in fossil fuels by 2030. So it's a huge shift in the kind of investment picture.
A lot of that investment will likely come from the private sector, but governments have to play a role too, says David Victor, a professor of innovation and public policy at UC San Diego. He says it's up to them to subsidize the upfront cost of energy projects and require the energy sector to clean up.
One of the most important things that government can do is set clear rules and expectations. And the places where private investment has flowed most liberally have been exactly in those areas.
But those supportive policies, he says, have to stay consistent over time, which is not guaranteed. There's also no guarantee that costs will stay low forever, says Kenneth Gillingham at Yale.
There are a variety of forces, such as higher labor costs, higher materials costs, that can work in the opposite direction.
But for now, he says, the trend lines on clean energy costs and spending are going in the right direction.
Whether the trend lines can keep going is the trillion-dollar question.
More like $4.5 trillion. I'm Henry App for Marketplace.
We talk a lot here about the nature of money, how it works, how policy affects it, also, though, the philosophy behind it. I say all that because the other day, a book called Negative Money landed on my desk. It's a book of poems by Lillian Yvonne Bertram, an associate professor of English at the University of Maryland, where they also run the MFA program. It's money through kind of a different lens. Professor Bertram, thanks for coming on the program.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Can we start, first of all, with the title of this book, Negative Money? What does that mean to you?
Oh, negative money to me is a kind of a state of lack that doesn't necessarily look like lack. I mean, I came up with the title because I was thinking to myself about the fact that myself and all of my friends and people I know, we all have, you know, full-time jobs and we're working, but no matter the money that we make, no matter the jobs that we have, we don't ever make more than we owe. And so I was almost like joking with myself, and I was like, Lillian Yvonne, you don't have money. You have negative money. And that's it's like you look like you have money, but it's not really there.
One of the many subtexts of the poems in this book that deal with money, and there are a dozen or so, right, in this book, so there's race and gender, right? It's a big thing in this book, and it's about the whiteness of capitalism. It's about the transactional nature of our society. It's about, as we talked about a minute ago, the constant state of indebtedness that so many people in this economy feel. And I wonder how those themes came to you.
I guess these themes came to me because they're themes that I live. You know, what I earn or don't earn has to do with how others see and value me, right? Choosing how to value people based on things like race and gender. So I'm very much aware that I navigate the world through this complex mix of how I'm seen, how I see others, how my value is determined by others. So these are themes that I live daily and that everyone I know lives daily. And a lot of those themes then come out in what I write.
One of the things that strikes me every now and then, having hosted this program for a while and talking occasionally to artists and writers, is that the concept of money, just to get us back to where we started, is sort of variable depending on a person's perspective. But fundamentally, it comes down to this idea that money is what money is because we believe it is money and that it is worth something and that we trust it. And I guess I wonder whether you trust
money?
Oh, gosh. Yes and no. When you, it's because like money can work for you when it works for you. Money can buy a prescription and then it, you're like, yes, I trust money, you know, in that case, or it can't. And then it's like, well, do we trust money or do we trust prices? Right. I don't trust prices more so than like trusting money is like trusting or being skeptical of how things are valued. Right. And in some cases.
Right. Well, look, because you said that, I now have to ask this question. I'm going to take you out of poet mode and into regular person living in this economy mode. What do you make of this economic moment that we're in?
It's difficult. It's really difficult, I think, because the wealth inequality is so supreme, and it always has been. But, you know, when you think of, you know, very, very wealthy people, I won't name the famous business folks that we all think of, who it seems right from the outside treat money like monopoly money. At the same time, again, like, you know, I go to the gas pump and I'm like, geez, you know, if this is hard on me, like, then it's hard on so many other people. I'm always saying like, nothing costs what you think it does. It's always costs twice as much.
Liliana Von Bertram is a poet, also a professor at the University of Maryland. Their most recent book, of which money is a key element, is called Negative Money. Professor, thanks for your time.
Thank you so much. This is a pleasure.
This final note on the way out today, one more housing data point. This one's from Zillow via Bloomberg. First of all, the total value of U.S. housing stock has risen more than $2.5 trillion in the past year. Remember, as Matt and Kristen were saying at the top of the program, that's in a rising interest rate environment. Also, Florida is now the number two most expensive housing market in the country, bumping New York to number three, California firmly at number one. All right, off we go, but not without your moment of economic context. One more price-related item in which I'm not sure Adidas is reading the room. They've got a new top-of-the-line running shoe out. It's called the Adizero Adios Pro Evo 1, $500 a pair. Fed's got a raise, am I right? Our digital and on-demand team includes Carrie Barber, Dylan Mithin, and Janet Wynn, Olga Oxman, Ellen Rolfes, Virginia K. Smith, and Tony Wagner. Francesca Levy is the Executive Director of Digital and On Demand. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.